Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Dear Prudence. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show. This is Mallory Ortberg. I am Dear Prudence. And today in the studio, we have a friend of the podcast, Joss Lavery, with us here. Sorry, I totally talked over you just now. Please say hello again.
Hello.
Fantastic. You did great.
Thanks.
He's a writer and academic living in the Bay Area. And he and I are going to dispense some advice together today.
We're going to try.
And I hope that we get to do a real goofus and gallant. Was I explaining goofus and gallant to you the other day?
You were, because I thought the word was doofus.
Yeah. So I assume most of the listeners are familiar with goofus and gallant.
You assume most of your listeners are American.
I do. I do assume that.
Okay.
Yeah. And goofus and gallant was a really popular cartoon series in Highlights Magazine, which was a magazine for children in waiting rooms. I see my producer clapping her hand, so I assume she went to the dentist at least once in her youth or adolescence. And it would always be like, when Gallant goes to his friends' houses, he always compliments their mother's cooking. And then there's a picture of him being like, that lasagna was fantastic, Marion. And then it'll be like Goofus accidentally kills his friend's pet turtles when he's there. And it just shows him like kicking animals and being like, oh, I'm unhappy. So the Goofus road is the wrong road.
So which one am I?
I think I referred to something as being the Goofus choice.
Okay.
And you didn't quite understand which way that was going. Would you like to be Gallant today? Would you like to be Goofus?
I do like lasagna.
Well, then I think it's settled. Fantastic. You will give good advice and I will give bad advice.
Okay.
And together we will edify children in waiting rooms. I also wanted to start, because I feel like you and I have discussed this a handful of times, there was a question I got today in the column that made me realize people will often write to me about relationships, usually romantic relationships, mm-hmm. but also relationships with family members in these really transactional terms in a way that I think has gotten really popular. Like, at what point do I like cut someone off because I've put up with too much, or have I sunk too much time and emotional energy into someone? It's very like relationships as investments. Mm-hmm. Are you getting your money's worth? This very black and white idea of people are either worth your time and attention or they aren't. And you have to decide, like, am I going to pull my funds out of this particular index and into another one?
Yeah. What's your portfolio looking like?
Yeah.
What are your options?
Wondering, like, where is that coming from exactly? Why does it bother me so much? The question today was very much, this woman had been seeing somebody. He was in his early 40s. She's in her mid-50s. Mm-hmm. They have this wonderful connection. They've been dating for about a year. He sort of made it clear that he does want to marry someone and start a family and presumably doesn't see that happening with her.
Yeah.
Whether it's because of her age or her own desires, I wasn't quite sure which. But it seemed pretty clear that's his goal. And that she is sort of wondering, that makes her very sad. She doesn't want to give up their connection, but she also doesn't want to just date indefinitely, kind of knowing he's looking for something else. And it was difficult to even think about how would we talk about this except in terms of investment.
Yeah. It's really difficult, too, because people tend to think, or sometimes think, of other individuals they have relationships with as accounts into which they've paid a certain amount over the years, therefore expect a payoff at a certain point, rather than as time shared in the present that now is past and decisions need to be made moving forward in some way.
Yeah, and that somehow I could see a version of this column where I gave her the advice, he has been wasting your time because he doesn't intend to legitimize your relationship by promising you forever. Which is not necessarily what I would have thought, but that's the sort of advice one often sees. And to protect your own investments, you should withdraw all of your accounts, cut him off, experience a sense of loss and move on,
mm-hmm.
Which actually ultimately was not too dissimilar from the advice I gave her, but for sort of different reasons, which was that, you know, she really wanted to kind of keep up their intense weekends together where they like go kayaking and mountain biking, but felt deeply sad at the idea of being a girlfriend with an expiration date. And I sort of said, you know, I think if he's made it clear that he's looking for something else, it would be very sad for you to sort of be downgraded in terms of the priority you take in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that you can break up with someone and stay best friends right away.
So I think in addition to sort of bank account metaphors, we've got food metaphors on the table,
mm-hmm.
expiration dates,
mm-hmm.
and then possibly radioactive material as well, half-lives.
Yeah.
The general rate of decline in intensity in a relationship.
Now I'm wondering if I'm going to be able to answer anyone's questions today with just no metaphors, none at all.
Be totally literal in everything we say.
All right, let's give it a shot.
let's give it a shot,
because these are such serious limitations. So speaking of finances and personal relationships, this is a question that I did not send to you in advance, but came through today.
Okay.
And I found it so intriguing that I feel very strongly that we should answer it right now.
Okay.
The subject line is house on fire.
House on fire.
Dear Prudence, my husband's sister and her husband lost their home in a fire. At the time, we insisted they move in with us until they worked out their insurance claim. 6 months later, they are still here, along with their three cats, and claiming that the insurance company is jerking them around.
Oof.
I happened to see a letter from their insurance company that my sister-in-law left on the kitchen table. It was dated less than a month after the fire, and they offered a huge sum of money and said that they would cover their cost to stay in a hotel or rental house until their house could be rebuilt. I asked my sister-in-law about it, and it turns out that she and her husband accepted a big fat check from the insurance company months ago, but have made no effort to begin rebuilding. My husband doesn't want to be in the middle of this, but suggested that they need to line up a contractor. My in-laws claim that they're the ones getting screwed by the insurance company and that their house was worth 10 times the settlement. I think they're delusional. They can rebuild for half the insurance settlement. They just don't want to. I'm ready to move out myself and leave my husband to deal with his sister. Any suggestions?
Wow, that's a big one.
It also feels so cinematic. Like
it
you
really
saw
does.
The letter on the desk.
Yeah.
But I also, this certainly seems like the kind of situation where they don't think they're doing anything wrong, so they wouldn't have gone out of their way to try to hide it.
Well, yeah, I mean, part of the difficulty is by moving in, you're entering into an implicit relationship with the letter writer, who I think has some reasonable expectation that you'd be kept informed about what the insurance company are doing.
Right. Yeah, it would be one thing to hear, we have been offered a settlement, but we're mad about it and we want to keep fighting it. But to claim you haven't gotten one. Also, actually, they accepted the check, apparently. And I don't know if that just means she saw that there was a check or if she saw some sort of confirmation that they've cashed it.
Yeah.
I'm realizing now I don't know a lot about insurance like policies and whether or not if they cashed the check would mean that they were no longer allowed to contest the amount of money they were being offered.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and assume when she says they accepted a big check that they've taken the money.
And that therefore they've ended negotiations.
Sure. And they're just kind of trying to spin their wheels.
There might be secondary insurance claims for furniture, for properties.
The next person I have on this show is going to be an insurance claims adjuster.
Yeah.
It's going to be Edward G. Robinson's from Double Indemnity. And he's going to give that great monologue about like the statistical likelihoods of various types of death. But so I think we can all agree that they've been given enough money that they could move out, but are choosing not to.
Yeah.
What should they do?
Well, I suppose the first thing is that they need to have an honest conversation with the in-laws about the what seems like it was, if not deception, then concealment of information, important information. And it seems like the in-laws really need to know how serious matters have got for the letter writer. I can, if it's getting to the stage where this person's considering moving out, that's a huge deal. And I would use every tool at my disposal to try to make my guests aware of that.
I feel like part of what's challenging about the situation, although obviously you can't change it now, is offering someone to move in with you until they work out insurance is a really vague offer.
Yeah.
Because to one person, it might mean I'm just going to stay with you for 2 weeks at most until I hear from my insurance about what they're going to be able to offer me. Somebody else might hear that as stay with us until you have a new house.
Right. Yeah. No, it's vague. But then at the same time, when a disaster like that befalls anybody, who's really thinking about the legalese?
No, of course. Who's thinking, you know, in 6 months, I bet you're really going to be trying to milk this situation for all it's worth.
And yeah.
But I certainly think that while I understand wanting to welcome in a family member after a disaster, 6 months is a really long time.
It is.
Especially when they mention the three cats. I can't imagine it's because they want us to know how much they love the cats.
No, sure.
I imagine it's because they are acutely aware of how many cats there are.
Yeah.
So this woman feels ready to move out, which makes me wonder, it sounds like maybe her husband is more inclined to sort of hash this out indefinitely.
It seems like he's being a little useless. He says he doesn't want to get involved, but he obviously is there. He obviously has to get involved.
You're pretty involved. They're living with you. It's pretty involved.
He doesn't want to be in the middle, but that's literally where he's positioned.
Mm-hmm. So this, what he has done is suggest to them that they need to line up a contractor.
Yeah.
Does that feel strong enough to you?
It doesn't feel strong enough to me. I think he needs to get more involved than that. He needs to start talking timelines.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think this would be the sort of situation where, again, I wouldn't necessarily say you should move into a motel and, like, get a lawyer and go to small claims court.
No. I don't think we're at that stage. But things have gotten serious enough that, timelines need to be drawn and agreed on.
Yeah. Yeah, to say, you know, if you've been offered such and such amount of money, if you want to contest it beyond that, they're already offering to pay for a motel. You can contest this elsewhere. Like, you have other options now. We are not the only thing standing between you and homelessness. What do you think? Another 6 months? Is that?
I think that's too long.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think that's too long, especially if the insurance company are agreeing to pay for accommodation in the short term. Also, I mean, 10 times the settlement, it seems like it is very likely to be a delusion. Insurance companies can try to screw you, but they don't try to screw you to 10% of the value of your place if that 10% can cover rebuilding the house and that, putting you up in a motel.
That leapt out at me, and I think this is one of those situations where maybe they did not move in with their brother and sister-in-law with the intention of running any kind of scam, but maybe as time went on, started to think, you know, if we'd finished that renovation we were going to do and then tried to sell the house the way the market is right now, why, we could have gotten 10 times what we paid
for it. It's a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I understand there can be this idea of, oh, we maybe lost out on a huge sum of money that we could have theoretically gotten, and that is something that will lead you to not accept a good offer when you have one, to take advantage of people who are trying to help you, and to sort of in general turn you into a sort of unpleasant person focusing on getting as much as you possibly can.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think people deal with these kinds of tragedies in different ways, and a kind of upsurge of desire to feather the nest is one of them.
Yeah. Okay. So,
did I ever tell you that my mother burned her house down?
Do you want this to be on the podcast?
I don't really mind.
Okay. Tell us about the time your mother burned her house down.
Well, she left the hairdryer on a bed, and the place
was the bed wet.
You know, I don't really understand this, and I don't really know exactly how it worked. She left the hairdryer on the bed. The bed went up. The house went up. My mother moved into a hotel for 6 months. And so I recognize some of this, because I think my mother definitely had some sense of, this was a disaster. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect this to happen. And yet, if I wait this out a little longer, things are going to fall into place and things are going to be better than ever.
This hairdryer is my ticket to success.
Yeah.
Okay, so don't do that if you're listening at home. But then I think for this reader in particular, it's really important that you and your husband figure out a timeline that you both can live with, that they need to be out of the house. And that doesn't mean they have to accept the insurance claim that they don't want. Mm-hmm. It just means they have to accept the offer to be put up in a motel.
Yeah.
And if you can't get that from your husband or from your in-laws, then you might need to consider moving out yourself.
It would make sense to me that this person would have to move out under those circumstances. Yes.
It does feel like you have to be willing to sort of anticipate, what am I willing to do if I can't get a compromise out of the other people? And I think I'm hopeful that there's a compromise here to be found.
Yeah.
But it certainly seems like they should be prepared for a lot of heel digging.
I agree. Yeah.
Well, good luck. And
good luck to everybody. That's an extremely difficult situation.
Yeah. Okay. I want to take a break for just a moment to remind you that the complete Dear Prudence podcast experience is exclusive to Slate Plus members. Hours and hours of me talking about Steely Dan. Members get much more of this show, more questions, more answers, more talk, more advice, more Steely Dan factoids, or dandoids, as I like to call them. I don't call them that. With no ads or interruptions. They also get more of the Dear Prudence column on Slate.com. And that's not all. Slate Plus members get longer, ad-free versions of other Slate podcasts, too. They get access to the ambitious Slate Academy series like The History of American Slavery, and a year of great books. They're first in line for tickets to Slate events like live podcast tapings, and they get 30% off of tickets. That's not even all. The whole thing is just $5 a month or $50 for a year. Try it free for 2 weeks. Go to slate.com/prudiepod, that's P-R-U-D-I-E pod, to sign up.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We are about to call a listener who recently left us a voicemail. Let's go ahead and take a listen.
Hello, my name is Corey, and I currently live in Seattle, Washington. I'm really excited about the ability to ask this question, and I sincerely hope that I can get an answer, because this is something that I deal with daily, and I don't know what to do. I am a trans man, meaning that I was born female and now live as male. I haven't had top surgery, so part of me, particularly my chest, still presents fairly female. The rest of me, however, pretty darn male. I wear only male clothes. I have a fair amount of facial hair. And as you might be able to hear, pretty deep voice. My name's Corey. It's not like I have a stereotypically feminine name. However, I am misgendered by strangers, acquaintances, people I know regularly, and even those I would call friends, daily, at least once a day, if not multiple times. And I don't know how to correct them appropriately.
Hi, Corey. This is Mallory, and I've got my friend Joss here in the studio.
Hey, Corey.
Hi, Joss. It's good to meet both of you.
Well, I'm so glad that we got a hold of you. Thank you so much for calling. So we were just thinking about your call, and it sounds like what you're going through is sort of on a daily basis, that anyone from a stranger at a coffee shop to the people that you know fairly well, coworkers, family, friends, will misgender you. And it sounds like sort of the thing that bothers you the most is when it comes from the people that you know. Is that sort of an accurate summation of what's going on?
That's absolutely the most accurate. I'd say with my family, it's been long enough that they've pretty much got it, except for distant members. But it's those folks who, you know, you might not necessarily be the closest friends with, but you see every day. Those coworkers and folks that you actually do know. With strangers, I could, you know, give or take. But the people who know me, that's the part.
Yeah, well, and I think that sort of your question, which is, you know, how do you bring this up with people? And I think the sort of important principle to bear in mind is that you're just correcting a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, presumably these are people who know you and care about you and are sort of unaware the ways in which they're being, you know, thoughtless and incorrect or painful or rude or just plain wrong. And would, if kind of given the opportunity, they would want to correct themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I was getting, you know, personal information about someone I liked or cared about wrong, I'd want to know. If I was spelling a friend's name wrong, I would want to know. If I was misgendering them, I would want to know. If I'd gotten their birthday wrong, I would want to know. So I think one thing that might be helpful is to, you know, assume in most of these cases, there's a baseline of goodwill and simple ignorance, and to just go with, actually, it's he, or actually, that's incorrect. I'm a guy. And to just say that and not sort of follow up with any sort of, you know, justification or explanation, but to just correct them and see how they respond. Is that something you've tried before? Have you sort of felt like you were reluctant to do that?
I think I've come from a kind of Southern hospitality environment. And so for me, that just don't want to bother anybody feeling is really inherent to my nature. Mm-hmm. So coming out and saying it, it's good when it's kind of the end of a sentence, right? Like, that girl over there, I can say, well, actually, it's he, him, but, you know, no worries, and then move on. To me, the issue kind of comes up when it's, you know, in the middle of a work day or what have you, and or out with friends, and it gets mentioned, and then the conversation goes on, and, you know, I'm almost after the fact. Like, how do I bring it up if the subject isn't
my gender or necessarily me. It makes, you know, I think it's a particular issue with those who get misgendered all the time. You sit in a conversation and it's just like when the joke has passed and you now have something funny to say, except for it's really, really important.
We talked to Corey for a while, and you can hear our conversation by subscribing to Slate Plus. Joss, I'm supposed to be closing the episode now, and I'm so glad that you decided to stick around the studio a little bit longer, because I feel like we are stronger together than we are apart.
I love you to pieces.
I do, too. And then the pieces of me that love the pieces of you builds them all up into a big, peace-filled, like a happy Frankenstein.
It's like
full of friendship.
The best version of the opening sequence of Game of Thrones.
All of these things are true, as well as, I guess, Transformers, which I've never seen.
Nor me.
So I should not have introduced that theme into the metaphor. And we've lost our literal goal, which was to not use any metaphors today. And I think I failed almost instantly at that.
Never mind.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Do you feel slightly more together in your own personal life, having dispensed advice to so many fellow sufferers?
You know, funnily enough, I do. Yeah, it's a strange feeling.
Yeah, you feel sort of like, wow, I guess I've really got it all figured out.
Yeah.
And that's just because we're sitting in a studio where all our problems are outside.
Yeah, and thank you for that experience.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's quite nice. It's very enjoyable, and I hope everybody out there gets to give advice to someone this week, and it makes them feel slightly more collected and calm and capable when it comes to their own problems.
It's a great piece of advice. Offer good advice.
Yeah, have good ideas.
Yeah.
Think critically and well, and be the type of person that others rely on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just go ahead, go forth, make it happen. Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Casey Miner. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Steve Lichtai is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts, and Andy Bowers is the chief content officer of Panoply. If you want to hear us answer your question, call and leave us a message at 401-371-DEAR. That's 401-371-3327. And you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can't even alter the sound of your voice, which, by the way, no one has yet asked for. So please, even if your question is not so sensitive, consider asking us to alter the sound of your voice so that I can have the fun of answering a voice-altered voicemail. And remember, you can hear longer, extra special bonus episodes of Dear Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. Okay, see you back here next week.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.